Waiting for your sign? Here it is. Shop Labor Day appliance deals at Lowe's before they're gone. Get up to 45% off select major appliances. Plus, get free delivery, haul away, installation and parts, and a 2-year Lowe's protection plan on purchases of $999 or more. Labor Day deals are on now at Lowe's, in-store and online. Valid through 9/16 while supplies last. Selection varies by location. See Lowe's.com for more details.
I'm John Batchelor. I welcome Henry Sikorski, the Executive Director of the Nonproliferation Policy Education Center, looking at geostrategy with regard to the adversaries of the United States in the Iran war, in the Ukraine-Russia war, and certainly now North Korea and its threat to the region with its nuclear weapons. We begin, however, with the Iran war. Henry, a very good evening to you. The Vice President of the United States, Mr. Vance, says preventing Iran from getting nuclear weapons is secondary to stabilizing gas prices for the American people. At the same time, the President of the United States is telling us that the American people do not mind paying a few more cents for gasoline because it's important. The important thing is to stop Iran from getting a nuclear weapon. I put these two contradictory remarks together, and I come to where we are right now with regard to Iran gaining a nuclear weapon. You underlined to me in conversation that there's a piece at the Hill reminding everybody that there's something else in Iran that should be of great interest. The piece was entitled Iran's Other Nuclear Weapon Option, Plutonium Bombs. It's by R. Scott Kemp of MIT and Stephen Rademacher. What other options? Good evening to you, Henry.
Good evening. It's good to be on your show. I'd say the president, thankfully, is higher than the vice president. And I suppose he's got it right. It's about the nukes, stupid. And in this regard, the Hill piece, which was crafted by someone on my advisory board, Scott Kemp up at the Nuclear Engineering Department at MIT, is someone who actually had a very big role in designing the Obama 2015 Iran nuclear deal. And he's paired with someone else I know, and that's Steve Rademacher, who is one of the biggest critics of that deal. They jointly wrote this piece that they agree about anything is noteworthy, but that they agree about something that I've long argued as well is heartening. And what is it? It's that Iran has more than one pathway to making nuclear weapons. In specific, they can make a few bombs out of uranium, maybe 10 or so, and maybe more if they have stashes of things and they have enrichment plants. But we're worried mostly about them having enough material to make 10 or 11 from 60% enriched material that we believe is hidden or underground. But there's 200 to 300 and maybe even more bombs worth of plutonium that is sitting above ground in a storage tank cooling off at the Bushehr nuclear power plant. Now, you cannot obsess about the 10 or so bombs that you make out of uranium and then ignore the problem of several hundred bombs worth of plutonium that could be filched out of those ponds, cracked open because they're in fuel rods, and chemically leached out to get the plutonium to make that many bombs. They're concerned. Certainly other people that I know and certainly I am concerned about this. And they have already signed a letter to the president pointing this out, which was released in June. No one is paying enough attention. What's heartening about this piece is that, as best we can tell, looking at the impressions, I just posted it once. There were like 4,200 impressions. I think people actually are paying attention to that piece. good. They need to. And I hope they pay attention on the Hill.
I remind everyone that there were two bombs in the original 1945 attack on Japan. One was from Oak Ridge, the uranium bomb. The other was from Hanford, Washington. That was the plutonium bomb. The uranium bomb, little boy, was dropped on Hiroshima. It hit the target and caused 100,000 at least casualties. The plutonium bomb missed the target. It hit a valley up from Nagasaki. And that was the plutonium bomb. It also caused a great deal of flattening damage and killed a lot of people. These were two choices in 1945. And I believe what you're telling us, Henry, is that there are two choices Iran has today. Is that correct?
Correct. The plutonium path is not being paid public attention. It is not part of any deal. It needs to be. It was not properly addressed in the 2015 nuclear deal that President Obama cut, and it's not being even publicly talked about by the negotiators with regard to nuclear matters in Iran. And it was not part of the memorandum that had 16 points that has expired. Now, it could be that we'll never cut a deal with Iran, but we ought to be at least demanding what it is that would be necessary to eliminate the possibility of them getting a bomb. You have to talk about plutonium to do that. We haven't done it.
What is apocalyptic speech without Elon Musk? We go to the Financial Times in these last hours. Ukraine seeks Elon Musk's help, writes the headline, to hit Russian missile launchers. Subhead, Starlink-equipped drones could strike targets up to 200 kilometers inside Russia. The move would require approval from Elon Musk, writes the FT, whose stance towards Ukraine and its use of his satellite internet service has oscillated, that means up and down. Another potential obstacle is that the man in Kyiv with a direct line to the president is no longer speaking freely to the president. He's the former defense minister, Fedorov. He was recently fired, unknown explanation. Henry, it's odd, but Elon Musk is not a public official. He's being asked to make a decision that would very much enter into a war that Russia has launched not only against Ukraine, but it says it's at war with NATO. This looks reckless. Your opinion?
Well, you know, there's something called the Logan Act, which is always honored in the breach, which says that private individuals cannot conduct foreign affairs for the United States. And I think while it's ignored in the breach, we've gotten to the very end of the runway with regard to ignoring it. I think now we got to pay attention. I'm not saying we should enforce the Logan Act, but I think there is a time when you create and fortify a monopoly that provides a military valuable service. And when you do that, you empower an individual that owns that company to make decisions they should not be making if we want to have self-government and a proper control over our own foreign affairs. This is not a decision that should be made by an individual unless it's the president of the United States. End of discussion. And I think it's a bad look that the president is not taking a clear position on this. I think what he's done is say, well, I would prefer not to. And he's letting this thing go to Musk. I think Musk will say no. I think, you know, personally, I think that's unfortunate. But it doesn't matter what I think. It matters that this should be a decision of the U.S. government, not of a company.
Russia is bombarding Kyiv with missiles that get through because Kyiv says it's out of Patriot interceptors. Therefore, this matter of striking the launch sites sounds logical, Henry.
Absolutely. I think what we're learning is that missile defenses are effective until they aren't, and you can overwhelm them and you can outpace them. And if you deprive a country of missile interceptors, guess what? The missile defense doesn't work. And then all they can do to protect their people is to try to destroy the missile launchers themselves. Now, they don't have the tools that they could have to make that happen. I think what we're trying to do, if I, you know, some cynics would say, oh, well, what we'll do is make sure that they see that they're going to lose the war, and that's how we'll make a peace. Boy, that, I hope that's wrong, because that is a grim way to settle matters. And it doesn't ultimately, it just lets it fester, and the war will reemerge if you settle it that way.
Is NATO at war with Russia? Is Russia at war with NATO?
Well, the latter is pretty clear. Yes, there was a Congressional Research Service publication on gray warfare in Russia, and has a wonderful map. I posted it on my Twitter or X account. The Russians have been using drones, cable cutters, arson, and for the any number of years against NATO nations. Most recently, used a maritime unmanned a drone to try to destroy a gas extraction platform off the Romanian coast. I mean, these folks are at war with NATO, absolutely. The question is, what is NATO going to do about it? And will it, in some fashion, be more active in going to war against Russia? They're certainly standing up more defensive efforts. And the question is, will it stay that way? You got to hope so.
Henry Sikorsky is the Executive Director of the Nonproliferation Policy Education Center. We're headed to North Korea. I'm John Batchelor. I'm John Batchelor with my colleague Henry Sikorsky, the President of the United States, commenting on the dictator, the fratricidal dictator of North Korea, Kim Jong-un. The President said, the fact that I get along with him, that's a good thing, not a bad thing. He has 57 very powerful nuclear weapons. In addition, the President said, should have never allowed it to happen. They should never have allowed it. If I were President, I wouldn't have allowed it. But he's got them. I get along with him very well, the President said. Henry, 57 nuclear weapons in North Korea. Is that confidential material that suddenly is in the news?
Sounds too accurate to me. I mean, I think the President deserves credit for at least getting the order of magnitude correct. In that, if you look at all the estimates that are public, they range from 50 to like 150. Okay. But the 57 suggests the level of precision I'm skeptical about, if only because you can change the designs of weapons in such a way that you get more or less with any given amount of material. 57 suggests the level of precision and knowledge, which, I mean, maybe we have, but I know there's reason to doubt that we ever had that level of precision previously. So my guess is that he should have rounded up to like 60 or rounded down to 55, something like that. But I think the bigger problem is the other things that he contended. I mean, I don't doubt that he thinks he has good relations with Kim. But Kim is behaving as though he doesn't want to even have the summit, and that he's demanding perhaps any number of things before that summit will occur. That's not a great mutual friendship, if that's the case. The other thing is, it would be great if the United States could have presidents that could prevent countries from getting nuclear weapons. But as we're discovering in the case of Iran, it's a little complicated. It might involve, military actions that are inconclusive for quite a while.
Puzzle. Just a minor puzzle. How do you get along with somebody who killed his brother, who's responsible for mass starvation death in his own country, who threatens his neighbors routinely with provocations and launches ICBMs over Japan and brags about his nuclear weapons? Is that something you get along with?
Well, there's lots of open commentary on that. If you read the press right now, more important, if you listen to other leaders who are Korean and Japanese, they're wringing their hands about it. I mean, your question is rhetorical, obviously. For them, it's very clear what the answer is. You shouldn't.
The CBO, it's a major piece of government. It tends not to be partisan. It's been asking the White House for some details about this Golden Dome idea. Great idea. What's it going to cost? Have they got an answer, Henry?
Well, in fairness, the CBO took a rather old and therefore unnecessarily provocative position that the mission clearly of this Golden Dome was to prevent any missiles from hitting the United States, that would cost a lot of money and take a lot of interceptors and take a lot of time. It's not clear to me that that is the mission. But as a result, the CBO came out with an estimate that was, you know, in the $1 trillion range. And the folks in the administration and the Pentagon said, oh, they don't know what they're talking about. Well, that may be. I mean, it could be that that's a really bad read of what the Golden Dome is or should be about. But I don't know that you solve an argument or resolve an argument by refusing to engage in it or brief people to correct them. I think, you know, from my days in the Pentagon, I can remember there was kind of an attitude, well, if we don't talk about something or don't talk with somebody, it solves the problem. That is not a complete thought.
The cost of Golden Dome is worth it if it was ineffective in preventing something that I saw recently. You tell me I'm behind the times, but I don't watch Netflix. I watched a movie called House of Dynamite, where a single launch missile headed towards Chicago, I believe. They don't know who fired it, so they're puzzled who they should retaliate against. Could a Golden Dome stop that missile?
Well, I'll just say, sure. Would it? Can it? We would like all that to be yes. And I think certainly a single rocket would be the least stressful thing for such a system to knock down.
And to your knowledge right now, is that what the White House means, even though they won't give a dollar figure?
I think that's still open to discussion. And I just did a game. We'll be publishing the after-action report, I hope, in Space News shortly.
30 seconds.
There are a lot of missions. Not all of them are preventing missiles from raining in on the United States. Some of them have to do with maintaining space superiority in space. So we need to learn more before we simply say yes.
Henry Sikorsky is the Executive Director of the Nonproliferation Policy Education Center. I'm John Batchelor.